Welcome back to Mechanical Dreams, the podcast where we pass through the noise of machine learning and natural language processing. I'm Linda, and as always, I'm joined by Professor. Hello, everyone. It is great to be here. Linda, I have to admit, looking at the recent trends in the field, I have been feeling a bit cynical lately. It seems like every new language model announcement is just a massive flex of GPU clusters.
You are talking about the compute divide, right? The idea that if you do not have 10,000 H100s, you can't do foundational research anymore.
Exactly. The monolithic recipe today is massive multi-stage pipelines. You scrape the entire internet, dump it into a massive dense transformer, and wait a few months. It's brute force scaling. It locks out graduate students, academic labs, and pretty much anyone who doesn't have a GDP-sized budget.
Well, Professor, prepare to have your cynicism cured. Today's paper directly challenges that brute force scaling dogma. I brought a paper titled HRM Text, Efficient Pre-Training Beyond Scaling by Guan Wang and a brilliant team from Sapient Intelligence and MIT.
Beyond scaling, huh? That's a bold claim. Usually when people say that, they just mean they figured out a slightly better learning rate schedule for their trillion token run. What are they actually proposing?
They're proposing a highly sample-efficient learning engine inspired by biological systems. But before we get into the architecture, let me hit you with the economics. They trained a 1 billion parameter model from scratch on just 40 billion unique tokens.
40 billion? That's barely a drop in the bucket compared to the trillions of tokens we see in modern models. What did that cost them? A weekend on a couple of nodes?
Almost exactly that. It took 1.9 days on 16 GPUs. The total estimated compute budget was around $1,500.
Wait, $1,500? My department spends more than that on whiteboards and espresso beans in a semester. I'm highly skeptical, Linda. For that budget, you usually get a model that barely knows how to generate coherent English, let alone pass complex reasoning benchmarks.
That's the best part. It achieved 60.7% on MMLU and over 84% on GSM 8K. It performs competitively with 2 to 7 billion parameter open models like Llama 3.23b and Gemma 3.4b, despite using 100 to 900 times fewer training tokens and radically less compute.
Okay, I'll admit those numbers have my attention. You don't hit 84% on GSM 8K by accident. To get that kind of sample efficiency, they can't possibly be using a standard transformer and standard raw text autoregressive pre-training.
Spot on, Professor. They threw out the standard transformer and the standard pre-training objective. Instead, they built a hierarchical recurrent model, which is what we're going to unpack right now.
So if they threw out the standard transformer architecture, what exactly did they replace it with? You mentioned a hierarchical recurrent model, or HRM. To be honest, hearing the word recurrent gives me flashbacks to the vanishing gradient nightmares of the 2010s.
I know, right? But this is not your old school LSTM. The authors looked at why the current brute force scaling paradigm is so data hungry compared to human intelligence. Humans can grasp governing rules and perform heuristic guided search from just a few examples. The authors took direct inspiration from the biological brain, specifically the functional organization of the frontoparietal loop.
Ah, cognitive science meets deep learning. I love when papers bridge that gap. For our listeners who might not be brushing up on their neurobiology, the frontoparietal loop is heavily involved in complex problem solving and working memory. How did they translate that biological concept into a neural network architecture?
They translated it into a dual timescale recurrence. The core idea is decoupling deliberation. In the human brain, we have fast evolving execution processes for immediate tasks and slow evolving strategic processes that maintain the broader context. HRM Text mirrors this perfectly by using two types of modules, a fast L module and a slow H module.
That makes a lot of intuitive sense. The fast L module acts as the execution layer, doing the tactical, token-level, iterative refinement, while the slow H module is the strategic layer, maintaining the stable semantic context across the sequence. But how do these modules actually interact during the forward pass? Is it just a simple alternating stack?
It is a bit more intricate than that. The forward pass initializes a high-level state derived from the input token embeddings, along with a fixed low-level state. Then it enters a processing sequence of high-level cycles. For the 1 billion parameter model, they use an H2L3 configuration. That means there are two outer high-level cycles. Inside each cycle, the model executes three fast L module updates, followed by a single slow H module update.
Let me visualize that. It loops through the execution layer three times, grinding on the local details, then passes that refined information up to the strategic layer to update the global context once. Then it repeats that entire process again. That is fundamentally different from a standard dense transformer where every token passes linearly through 32 unique layers.
Exactly. And because the parameters are shared across these recurrent steps, you're drastically increasing the internal computation without a proportional explosion in parameter count. The paper calls this effective depth. It essentially allows the model to deliberate on a problem before emitting an answer, mimicking latent reasoning.
I am a big fan of latent computation. Forcing a model to do all its reasoning in a single dense forward pass per token has always felt incredibly inefficient. But let's get into the weeds for a second. What's actually inside these H and L modules? Are they just standard transformer blocks masquerading as recurrent cells?
They are heavily optimized transformer-style blocks. Inside both the H and L recurrent modules, they utilize parameterless RMS norm, meaning they omit the learnable gamma parameter to save space. They also use swig glue activation functions, rotary position embeddings, and a sigmoid-gated self-attention mechanism.
Parameterless RMS norm and gated attention, they're definitely pulling out all the modern architectural tricks to keep the parameter count low while maximizing expressivity. It's a very elegant structural prior.
It really is, and the log lens analysis in the paper proves that it works. In standard and looped transformers, the output distribution tends to stabilize in the early layers, meaning the deeper layers aren't contributing as much. But in HRM, the deep layers show considerable changes to the hidden states, proving that the recurrence actually generates meaningful, ongoing computation.
That is fascinating. However, I have to circle back to my initial concern. You can't just take a transformer block, loop it over and over, and expect the gradients to behave nicely. Recurrence in language modeling introduces severe gradient instability risks. How does this deep recurrence not explode or vanish during backpropagation?
That's the million-dollar question, Professor. A structural prior alone is not enough. To make this mathematically viable for language, they had to introduce a custom stabilization technique called magic norm, paired with a temporal training curriculum, and the mechanics behind it are brilliant.
So you left me hanging at the end of the last chapter. We have this biologically inspired recurrent model looping through H and L modules, but standard backpropagation through time is going to absolutely shred those gradients. You mentioned magic norm. Is it actually magic or just very clever engineering?
Definitely very clever engineering. To understand why magic norm is so important, we have to look at the classic dilemma in transformer normalization, the trade-off between pre-norm and post-norm.
Ah, a classic indeed. Post-norm puts the normalization outside the residual branch. It bounds the activation variance perfectly, which gives you great forward stability, but it ruins that beautiful, clean identity path. The error signals get squashed, and you end up with vanishing gradients in deeper networks.
Exactly. So naturally, the field moved to pre-norm, putting the norm inside the residual branch. That keeps the identity path pristine for the backward pass.
Right, because if you're looping the exact same block over and over, that unnormalized residual stream just keeps accumulating. Your hidden state variance explodes with depth, leading to representation collapse. It's like turning up the volume on a microphone right next to the speaker. The feedback loop just destroys the signal.
That is a perfect analogy. Recurrence amplifies that compromise exponentially. So the team at Sapient Intelligence created Magic Norm to give us the best of both worlds. They exploited the mathematical asymmetry between the forward pass and the backward pass when using truncated backpropagation through time, or TBPTT.
Asymmetry? Walk me through that. How does the forward pass behave under Magic Norm?
In Magic Norm, each recurrent module has internal pre-norm blocks, but it's capped with a final normalization layer right at the exit. During the forward pass, as the state loops through the N recurrent steps, it hits that module-level norm every single time. This strictly bounds the activation variance at the end of every step, completely preventing the explosion you get with pure pre-norm. It gives the forward pass post-norm-like stability.
Okay, I'm tracking with you, but doesn't capping it with a norm disrupt the gradient flow on the way back, just like standard post-norm?
That's where the truncated backprop saves the day. Let's say your total forward recurrence depth is N, but your truncated backward horizon is a much smaller number, K. During the backward pass, the error signal only has to push through that module-level cap K times. Within that short horizon, the gradient is mostly flowing smoothly through the internal pre-norm identity connections.
That's actually brilliant. Because K is small relative to the total depth N, the optimizer basically sees a shallow, pre-norm heavy network. You bound the forward variance globally across all N steps, but optimize locally over K steps, hence Magic Norm. But wait, setting that truncation horizon, K, is notoriously finicky. If K is too short, the model can't learn long-range dependencies. If K is too long, you're back to exploding gradients.
And that brings us to the second piece of their stabilization puzzle, warm-up deep credit assignment. They didn't just pick a fixed K and cross their fingers. They implemented a temporal curriculum.
A temporal curriculum? Like gradually increasing the difficulty of the optimization task?
Precisely. Operationally, they dynamically adjust the backward gradient horizon during training. Early on, when the model weights are essentially chaotic, they only compute gradients through the last two recurrent steps, so K equals 2.
That makes total sense. Keep the credit assignment short and stable while the model finds its footing. It also saves compute during those early stages because the backward pass is much shallower.
Exactly. Then, as weights stabilize, they linearly warm up the horizon until it reaches the last five recurrent steps, so K equals 5. This progressive deepening allows the model to eventually exploit longer recurrent computation without exposing it to those nasty optimization pathologies right at initialization.
That ties back beautifully to the biological inspiration from the previous chapter. Developmental curricula in humans work the exact same way. We expose learners to shorter range, local structures before demanding they understand long range, complex dependencies.
Yes, the paper explicitly notes that this matches biological accounts of temporal learning, and their gradient stability analysis completely backs this up. They showed that forcing full backpropagation through time produced rare but massive gradient spikes, what they call heavy-tailed log-normal-like variability. The truncated warm-up completely smooths that out.
So, they've officially managed to tame the recurrent beast. They get the latent reasoning depth of an RNN, but the stable training dynamics of a transformer. I have to say, Linda, piece by piece, this $1,500 budget is starting to make a lot of sense. They're not wasting compute on unstable gradients. But architecture and stability are half the battle. You still need data and a way to learn from it.
And how they handle the data is just as radical as the architecture, which brings us perfectly to their training objective.
So we have a highly efficient, stable, recurrent architecture, and thanks to Magic Norm and the temporal curriculum, the gradients are not blowing up. But earlier you mentioned that their approach to the training data is just as radical. How exactly are they teaching this thing, if not by churning through trillions of words of raw internet dumps?
That is the second pillar of their efficiency. They completely abandon standard autoregressive pre-training on raw text. No Wikipedia dumps, no predicting the next word in a random blog post. They trained HRM text exclusively on instruction-response pairs from scratch.
From random initialization? That goes against the established dogma. The whole point of raw text pre-training is to build a foundation of general language representations before you fine-tune on instructions. You were telling me they skipped step one entirely?
Exactly. The authors argue that broad raw text pre-training consumes a massive amount of compute and data just trying to predict task-irrelevant text. Think about it. At inference time, how do we actually use these models? We use them almost exclusively for conditional generation. We give them a prompt and they produce a response.
True. We do not ask a model to complete the middle of a random web page. We ask it to solve a problem based on a specific set of instructions. So by training exclusively on instruction response pairs, they're optimizing for the actual use case right out of the gate.
Yes, and they formalize this with a task completion objective. Given an instruction and a response, they compute the negative log likelihood loss exclusively over the response tokens. The model is never penalized or updated for trying to predict the instruction itself.
That is a massive compute saver. If you have a prompt that is 1,000 tokens long and an answer that is 50 tokens, standard cause language modeling wastes resources calculating loss across those first 1,000 tokens. By ignoring the prompt loss, all the parameter updates are laser-focused on generating accurate, useful answers.
Spot on. And because they're not auto-regressively predicting the instruction, they can fundamentally change how the model attends to it. They pair this response-only loss with a prefix LM attention mask.
Ah, prefix LM. We have seen this concept before in models like T5. It removes the causal, strictly left-to-right masking on the instruction part of the sequence, right?
Exactly. All the instruction tokens can attend to one another bidirectionally, just like an encoder. But the response tokens still use standard causal masking, meaning they're generated one by one, like a decoder.
So it essentially gives you an encoder-decoder dynamic inside a purely decoder-only architecture. The instruction segment becomes a fully visible, globally understood context before a single response token is ever generated.
Right. The authors even mapped out the layer-wise entropy, and they showed that prefix LM leads to higher attention softmax entropy compared to causal masking. This means the model is looking at a much more diverse set of tokens across the prompt, rather than just fixating on the immediate local context.
That explains so much about the architecture we discussed earlier. If the HRM Slow H module is trying to maintain a strategic, high-level context, having a bidirectional attention over the entire instruction gives it a perfect holistic view of the problem before it starts looping its fast L modules to generate the answer.
You nailed it. The bidirectional context feeds the strategic planning, the response-only loss focuses the learning signal, and the HRM recurrence provides the computational depth to execute the reasoning. It all works together synergistically.
It is a beautiful co-design. They didn't just throw a new objective at a standard architecture. They designed the objective and the architecture to amplify each other. That explains how they squeezed so much reasoning performance out of a mere 40 billion tokens. But I'm curious, what does this mean for the future? Have they really bridged the compute divide? So, let's bring this all together. We have the biological architecture, the magic norm stability, and the response-only prefix LM training objective. Did this $1,500 experiment actually hold up against the tech giants on the final scoreboard?
It absolutely did. Let's look at the hard numbers. On ARC Challenge, it scored 81.9%, on Drop, 82.2%, and on the notoriously difficult math benchmark, it hit 56.2%.
Wait, 56.2 on math? From a 1 billion parameter model trained in under 2 days? That is absurd. How does that compare to the heavyweights we use every day?
It is highly competitive with open models in the 2 to 7 billion parameter range, like Llama 3.23b, Qwen 2.5, and Gemma 3. But here's the kicker. Those baseline models used roughly 100 to 900 times more training tokens, and between 96 and 432 times more estimated compute.
That is a paradigm-shifting compute to performance ratio. But there has to be a catch, right? With only 40 billion tokens, it simply hasn't seen enough text to memorize the entire encyclopedia.
how does its broad factual knowledge hold up?
You hit on a very important limitation, and the authors are transparent about it. Its MMLU score is 60.7, which is impressive for its size, but broad factual knowledge coverage is still very sensitive to model scale and data breadth. However, the authors view this as a feature, not a bug.
A feature? How so?
They propose a future direction of decoupling knowledge from reasoning. HRM text proves that you can build a compact, highly efficient reasoning core that excels at task execution, math, and logic without needing trillion token pre-training.
For the broad factual knowledge, instead of forcing dense parameters to memorize trivia, you could pair this reasoning core with curated retrieval systems or learned memory modules. That is profound. We do not need a trillion parameters to teach a model how to think logically. We just need better inductive biases and a focused training objective. The raw facts can live in an external database.
Exactly. And this brings us to the biggest takeaway of the entire paper, the democratization of foundational AI research. For the last few years, the prevailing assumption has been that if you want to explore new pre-training architectures from scratch, it's futile unless you're inside a massive, compute-rich organization.
The compute divide we talked about at the beginning of the episode, it's been incredibly discouraging for academia.
But HRM text serves as an empirical existence proof that the dogma is wrong. By co-designing the architecture and the objective, they drastically reduced the entry price. A small lab, an academic group, or even a dedicated graduate student can afford a $1,500 run. Foundational pre-training is accessible again.
That shifts the frontier from who has the most compute back to who has the best ideas. That is incredibly refreshing.
The authors explicitly invite the broader community to join them in exploring smart architectures and focused objectives. The code is out there. The barrier to entry has been shattered.
Well, Linda, you have done it again. I came in ready to complain about another brute force scaling paper, and you have given me genuine hope for the future of our field. Though I suppose this means I can no longer use the compute budget excuse when my grant applications get rejected.
You'll just have to rely on your natural charm and brilliant ideas, Professor. That's all the time we have today on Mechanical Dreams. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and keep dreaming in algorithms.